This week on Potlatch, Pat Isaacson of Manly Hot Springs and some whale music. Talking to Pat Isaacson, who is president and chairman of the board of the Bean Ridge Corporation of Manly Hot Springs. How'd you get a name of Bean Ridge, and where's Bean Ridge, Pat?
Well, Bean Ridge is the name of the ridge that runs around the northern sector of our lands. And it's quite a famous place, and we used to do a lot of caribou hunting up in that region. And it's quite windswept, very sparsely wooded. And it sounded like the good name for a corporation. Something everybody can pronounce.
And what have you and your corporation done with the Native Land Claims settlement?
We really haven't gained title, which wouldn't be a fee simple title, but it would be an interim conveyance title, a special title for this kind of a thing. And the BLM is expected to present this kind of title in the very near future. As far as monies are concerned, monies go basically according to population, and we didn't have that great a population to warrant any significant amount of monies. But we are considering several ventures right now. The basic income, I think, for the corporation will come from the land, and this is why we're pressing for title from BLM.
What was the population breakdown of Manly? And how many people and how many are native?
Well, our basic enrollment figures come to about 42 persons. Now, of that, 10 are in my family, and 9 are in another, and 8 in another, and the families get smaller as we go on. They're about 30% Eskimo, 70% Indian, I figure. And in order to qualify under the Act, you had to have at least 25 people living there at the time of the Act, in which we easily qualified for that. I think we had some 13 Native kids in school at the time, which you know, as proof, we had quite a few more adults living there, too. But we had to have these 25 people. We also had to have an ancestral right to that ground. And my mother and her two sisters were raised there in Manly Hot Springs in their early years, as I was in my early years. And between the 42 of us, we made a pretty solid case for Manly Hot Springs. It took a lot of running around, hard work, gathering of affidavits, gathering of proof before the deadline set under the Act. But with a little help from my friends, we got it pretty much together. And we presented a very successful case. Doyon Tanenaw Chiefs was very instrumental in it. Presented a very successful case against the state's claims. And, of course, I wasn't there. I wasn't able to be in court, in hearing court, at the time this took place. I was in the hospital. But all the footwork, all the running around, really paid a very large dividend for us.
What was the total non-native population at that time of Manly?
Well, it's a very strange thing. We have a voting record that has, I think the voting rolls have some 40 or 50 people on it. Only one little problem, a lot of those people are deceased, and a great quantity of those people, again, don't live year-round in Manly Hot Springs. They only live there on a summertime basis. The road is closed in the winter. And each year they present a petition to keep it closed. I guess they have a lot of vandalism when they're not there. There's a lot of absentee voters. A lot of deceased voters, too. I checked it out pretty thoroughly.
We'll hear Pat Isaacson's comments on Alaska Native Hire on the pipeline after an unusual musical interlude. The Columbia University Geophysical Field Station's Frank Watlington went to St. David's, Bermuda, in the Caribbean Sea. There he put an underground microphone 1,500 feet into the sea with a cable leading to a tape recorder in his onshore office. With this underwater microphone, called a hydrophone, he recorded songs of a humpback whale. The recordings we'll hear are slowed down four times. Now, a song of the humpback whale. Now, you worked for a while for the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company as a counselor, and you had to counsel primarily native workers. Is this true, or were you also involved in counseling non-native people about native people?
Well, basically, in the beginning, it was a program designed to help the native worker adapt in certain working conditions and situations. But eventually it was brought about to include all of the native people. I mean, I don't mean all of the native people, but all of the workers on the pipeline. But in the beginning, we would help them with labor problems, employer-employee problems, personal problems, that kind of thing. And we did evidence a lot of situations which aren't exactly kosher in the field of labor relations. Many racist type situations, race problems, you know, between the native employee and the employer, the execution contractor on the pipeline, and they had certain attitudes which had to be dealt with. I felt we did a very good job in keeping it out of the limelight, but solving the problems too.
What were people doing that or thinking that was anti-native?
Well, oftentimes I found personally on the pipeline that there were people, foremans, bosses, superintendents, who would tend to hire their own cousins, their own family, from wherever they came from, Arkansas, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Texas. And it got to be sort of a family affair. Hence, anybody who was Alaskan, especially Alaskan Native, constituted a threat to their jobs and their family's jobs. Sometimes, whole communities are supported by what their relatives can dig up for them in terms of jobs. And I could mention a few of these communities, but I don't know if it'd be very safe.
Are you suggesting then that there was discrimination against Alaskan natives because simply they were Alaskans, or because people wanted to get their cronies on the job?
Well, both. I'd say both. This kind of a job, people from down south, where wages are not too high, I think maximum wage is $2.50 an hour, or the minimum wage is $2.50 an hour. They look on $9 an hour, or $13 or $12, as pure heaven. And when you have that kind of competition, they're going to go after it, you know. And so it's basically both. But also they have a definite attitude toward Indian peoples and native peoples in general.
What is that attitude?
Attitude is that, well, I've been told personally that they're lazy, they don't measure up, not as hard a worker. But after having seen my people on the pipeline, I know that they do measure up. And I've seen some of these boys from Kotzebue and Barrow spend all day working out in the cold and only come in during their lunch break, whereas the people who are not Alaskans, every 15 minutes you watch them go into the warm-up shack to thaw themselves out. And our people just seem to have a lot more stamina when you're working in a pipeline situation. They're not having to go back to the bus every half hour, 15 minutes to warm up. And well, my biggest complaint on the pipeline was that when they had to do a lot of sitting around, native people were really complaining because they weren't working and they didn't feel like earning their money. And that actually was my biggest complaint during the summertime, is the fact that, well, you have a big job like this and sometimes there is a lot of downtime. And that was the biggest complaint, strangely enough.
When somebody is down, can this be for a whole day or days on end?
It certainly can, and you see a whole crew out there sitting around.
When you do this, how much are you paid? Are you paid for an 8-hour day or a 12-hour
day? Whole
day. Which is what, 8?
No, 12 usually. 10 or 12. Usually 10, I would say, be the average.
But you don't get any overtime beyond that if you're down?
No.
What about the complaints that I've heard from rumor that some people don't like to hire Alaskans because Alaskans don't stay on the job? They will work 9 weeks or 10 weeks and earn enough money and then not want to go back. Has this been your experience for Alaskans in general and for Alaskan natives in particular?
It's been my particular experience to notice that a man who is past 30, has a wife and kids, has more of a tendency to stay on the job. Whereas a man who is aged 18 to 30 years has more of a tendency to take off whenever he pleases because he has no responsibilities to fulfill towards a family obligation. And I don't think we could classify it strictly in terms of native and non-native because it's more an age-related problem. The older your worker, the more chance that you have of retaining that worker on the job for a longer period of time. And, 9 weeks is a long time to stay on a job, any job, continuous day after day, 10 hours a day. Also, we have another problem. A lot of native peoples are not used to steady employment for that long a period of time. And they tend to take off from time to time and go fishing, hunting, and live the life they love. But this is this kind of problem is in the minority compared to the age-related problem.
Would this tendency to go back to the land to hunt and fish, is this more prominent among Alaskan natives than among non-Alaskans or non-native Alaskans?
Oh, definitely, definitely. It's more prominent among the village-raised people, the people who are from the village. Even the urban people tend to stay on the job because they are not used to going out a lot.
In your opinion, does the Alaskan hire law really work?
Well, let's put it this way. If the execution contractors were from Alaska, it would probably work. But I don't foresee it working. I haven't seen it work. I haven't seen anyone try to enforce it.
Can it be enforced?
It can be enforced, but it has more of a tendency to be enforced if The execution contractor is Alaskan and from Alaska.
Is most of the native, non-native problems that arise, are these from natives, with native people having problems with people outside, from outside, or is it native people having problems with non-native Alaskans?
I'd say it's more outside, because, well, Alaskans and Alaskan natives are pretty much used to each other, and I haven't noticed too much problem in that respect. It's usually the outsiders, the chechakos, the newcomers, that are the basic problem. They have attitudes which my people simply won't put up with. And when I say my people, basically, you know, it's from the village, and they're just not used to this kind of treatment, and they're not going to, they simply don't stand for it.
What do they communicate, say, non-verbally, without saying?
Non-verbally, the communication is, what are you doing here? This is ours, and it's our money, and how come we're spending it on you? And there's a definite resentment, you know, when they see somebody making the same money they are, and they class them as a social inferior.
Than what you're saying. The outsiders treat the Alaskans as outsiders while in Alaska.
This has been known to happen, yes.
Do you think this hiring cronies is an isolated problem or a continual problem? I know I've talked to contractors who say, well, we do have one or two instances of this, but by and large, we're doing it.
I think it's a continual problem, and not only is it continual, it's contagious. Once people get the drift of what's going on, they tend to do it more and more, unless they're stopped. And there have been several investigations in this field, and I think some of it has stopped as a result. But unfortunately, the people who are doing the investigating don't seem to have the money to hire the people to put in the field.
Do you find any instances of people being turned down for jobs because they're native?
Well, we've made a lot of great strides in the past couple of years. We've broken down a few doors, and it's going to work. One way or the other, it's going to work.
Are you satisfied with the numbers who have been hired? I believe there was a goal of the number of Alaskan natives that people wanted hired, and that goal has been exceeded, as far as I understand.
Well, it depends on how they're doing the counting, again. Are they taking total numbers of hire or total numbers on the job? You know, when you've got 20% of the people and only ask for 10% of the hire, and as a result, you only get 5% native hire, that doesn't sound to me like it's working. Whereas if we have 10% of our people on the job, well, maybe it's halfway working. It's a matter of percentages.
Are there Alaskan Native people, though, who want pipeline jobs who can't get them?
Yes, there are. I meet them every day.
This has been true during the peak season. Now it's just about building up again, but is this true? Was this true during the summers, too?
Let me see. Not so much during the summers, I don't think, as during the winters, when people seem to need money more in the winters for fuel and food and such.
How do you see people's attitudes this way? Do they look upon Native people as undependable drunks?
A lot of them do. But I don't think Alaska is any different than any other northern country. All northern countries traditionally have a high rate of alcoholism and drinking. And a definite, the more north you go, the greater the consistency. And I think it has something to do with maybe the weather or long periods of winter and idleness. But I don't think the problem was any greater than in any other northern country. And yes, we do have a definite problem in that respect. And I think it would be facetious to deny it. But these problems are being worked on. And maybe one of these days we'll make some headway.
Is it your experience that only the native are native people the only ones who are getting drunk and not returning to their jobs?
No, they definitely aren't.
Is this true? Does this happen a lot with people from the lower 48, too?
It certainly does.
Have you run into any problems with hiring Alaskan Native women?
Yes and no. On that one, yes, in the respect that any woman is welcomed in the pipeline camp. But comes between a non-Native woman and a Native woman, they usually pick the non-Native woman. But maybe this is changing, I don't know.
Is there anything you'd like to comment on?
The counseling program that Alyeska has put forth seems to be working. And I'd like to see the same kind of program put forth by any other company that's going to be out there. Because there are a lot of problems that come up, and there is a lot that can be done. You're rather in an isolated situation, and unless there is somebody specifically there in a camp of, say, 1,200, 600 people to help people with their problems, it's usually lose that employee. And I know there have been a lot of employees saved through this counseling program.
Listen to the pouring rain, listen to it pour. And with every drop of rain, you know I love you more. Let it rain all night long. Let my love for you grow strong. As long as we're together, who cares about the weather?
Listening to The Falling Rain with Ann Murray. The Governor's Growth Policy Council has been asking Alaskans what, if anything, the state should do with the Hall Road built by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company to carry freight to pipeline camps north of the Yukon River. I asked Pat Isaacson for the perspective of an Athabascan from Manly.
Well, I'd like to say something about that in reference to my own village, Manly Hot Springs. My grandmother and my grandfather, when they had their homestead across from Dugan Creek down in Manly Hot Springs, they were able to go out there. In the middle of the night, they'd hear the rumbling of hoofs on the ice, and they'd go out there and they'd shoot their winter's meat when the caribou came through. Well, You don't see those caribou anymore. And back then, it was just black with caribou, the whole country, when they'd come through. Those caribou aren't there anymore, and this is a result of, say, the gold rush, influx of people, and state hunting laws. Now, there's another thing that happened to Manly. There was a road built from Fairbanks, punched right through to Manly Hot Springs. We used to have pretty good moose hunting in Manly. Well, a couple summers ago, we took the boat and we went up the Baker Creek, up to Zitsiana, all along the whole Tanana River. We couldn't even find tracks. That's pretty thin soup when you can't find tracks. And the hunting is so terrible that unless you've got an airplane, it's almost next to impossible to find the game. And this is a result of ready access through that road. Now, if you want to open north of the Yukon Hall Road to the public, you're not only going to experience this, but you're going to experience a lot more.
Like what?
Well, public pressure. People littering the highways is just a small instance. Big instance is people will see the game. Just seeing it, they'll want it. And I've seen herds of caribou, moose, wolves, bear, and lots of it. And as a result, if this road is open, especially open to the public and hunting pressure, there'll be no end to the catastrophe upon the land. And I think Tanana Chiefs have said this. And matter of fact, they've opposed all roads north of the Yukon originally. And I think I totally agree with that. Because we've seen in my country and the surrounding area just what a road will do to the countryside. You not only get forest fires, you get overhunting, and as we all know, the herds north of the Brooks Range have been depleted seriously in just the last couple of years. And I don't think opening the road would help those caribou at all.
Now, what would happen if there were controls, fish and game management in those areas?
Well, I don't think fish and game is equipped to handle the kind of problem we're talking about. I think they've shown that. They're simply understaffed, undermanned. They simply haven't got the money it takes to patrol the area. You can't watch everybody, like it said. You know, you can fly out there and never see anybody for weeks upon end, let alone a fish and game patrol plane. They mainly they like to patrol around the places where there is a population density, like the village. And consequently, it's the subsistence hunter that suffers from their patrols, and not the not the person that's out there from the States and hunting illegally. Or even, I think that pretty much sums it up.
Thanks very much. Our guest, Pat Isaacson, of President and Chairman of the Board of Bean Ridge Corporation of Manly Hot Springs. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.